episode 151 of We Talk Comics. This one we're going to title Still Going. That's right. We're still going. You know what? We're coming in on our 5th year anniversary. August 11th will be our 5th year anniversary. And of course, none of this would have been happening without the guy who's there from the very first episode and the guy who pushed to get the interviews with Neil Adams, Mike Mignola, and others on that very first comic convention that we attended that caused this podcast to begin. He's the chief defender of the faith. You can hear his work by that excellent Neil Adams interview. Many of the best ideas on the podcast have come from him. And also, and some of the worst, maybe, but maybe the best ideas have come from the podcast on him. As I said, the chief defender of the faith. And if you want to go back to the archives, and we have so much in the archives, this free stuff with him, I'd recommend the Bill Willingham interview as his one of his high points. He is Brett.
I was thinking that you were meaning somebody of the best ideas from the podcast have come from Neil Adams.
That'd be something else. That'd be something.
It's the Expanding Earth podcast.
That's right. We're broadcasting live from the Hollow Earth.
This next guy first joined us as a regular host on the 4th episode of We Talk Comics. Pretty soon we got into the new 51 and did the reviews. That was his idea. He pushed us into it. That helped grow the podcast greatly in the early days. You can hear Keith's great interviews with Jerry Ordway and Dan Juergens. And also, you can also know him as the man who is part reporter, part cub, all K. Keith, how are you doing?
I am great, Mo. Those are actually the interviews I said just earlier today. I told someone those are my favorite interviews that I've ever done on the show. That's a good pick, yeah.
This next man, he first joined us on the 2nd episode. He didn't become a regular co-host until the 10th episode. But he is the man who is without a nickname because he doesn't need it. He is Chris. And if you want to listen to his great stuff in the podcast, definitely his interview with Terry Laban. But definitely, if I was to say to you, go back for a moment for Chris, it would be the moment where he's trying to find Wi-Fi, can't find it, eventually ends up outside in his car in minus 1 billion degree weather, freezing his ass off. Just so he can talk comics because he is that dedicated. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I got my Winnipeg sludge water 2-liter bottle ready to go. I got my jelly moose antlers. Let's do this. Let's talk some comics.
Let's talk some comics in Canada, clearly. And I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. And this is episode, as I say, we're calling it Still Going. Because I can't believe it. August 11th, guys. Are we going to do something for our 5-year?
Feels like we should.
Yeah. That's significant.
That's.
I didn't think.
Let's do what we always do. Say we're going to do something and then run out of time.
I love it.
that does sound good.
Very consistent.
Yeah. To stay on track with We Talk Comics, sometime around August 19th. We'll get together and go, oh, crap. One of us was supposed to remember when the date was coming up.
Wonderful. Of course, here's the funny thing is, there's no guarantee I didn't get that date wrong anyway. There's absolutely
no. You know what? You could completely pluck a number out of your ass and we'd all be like, yeah, 5 years. You're right.
I might be wrong. It might be August 4th. I don't really know, to be honest with you. Somewhere around there. I know it's August 2011.
Call you on it if you said, like, it was our 10-year anniversary. We might be like, really?
We used to do it. In the tape trading days back in our first.
Well, by that token, right. It's our 20.
We're just talking about our relaunch.
20, you know,
just our 2011 relaunch as a electronic podcast.
That's right. Back when we were just a radio show, the tape traders for the tape traders back in the early 90s. So, anyways, this is, like I say, episode 151, and we're going to get to the show pretty quick. But we got a lot of tweets and emails and some comments and a lot of people wanting to know. And I promised them an update because there's a lot going on. You know, it's a lot of crazy stuff happening in this world. It's and everything like that. So everybody's just, Brett, how's your bloodshed?
Oh, well, you know, it's okay. Turned out I just had a comic book moment.
Okay. All right.
A comic book movement, yes.
Movement. People were wondering, Anywhere Wonder. You got that taken care of, did you?
Yeah.
Brett, I just want to say that I was really impressed by the telethon that they did for you.
Jerry Lewison hosted. That was something for me.
It was. I mean, I'd like to say it was moving, but you know, movements were what got you into this trouble.
Excellent. You guys find that joke so much funnier than I do.
Love it.
I think it's run its course, though.
If we could title an episode Bloodshit and get away with it, you know I would.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to this week's group of books. This week it was Keith who got to choose the books. Keith, what did you pick and why?
I picked kind of a grab bag. We tried this new thing where we're kind of branching out and trying some different types of books. So I threw in an independent, it's a long form comic, basically. It's not quite a graphic novel because it is sort of to be continued. But it is a longer issue called Deadeye Begun in Blood from CME Comics. Also, I grabbed the latest issue of the anthology Dark Horse Presents, which is issue 23 of the current run, because I wanted to talk about some licensed books. Both Chris and I were saying last week we don't read a lot of licensed books. I grabbed a late issue, number 54 of Transformers from IDW.
And just so you know, when it's my turn and we're reading all Hellboy books, that pick is what caused this one.
All right. Well,
goddamn Transformers.
We're almost ready to go right into that review. I'm gonna mention the comic that we couldn't as a 100% Canadian content podcast, or at least Canadian hosts, we certainly couldn't pass up Dynamite's one shot of Yoga Hosers, tying into the upcoming Kevin Smith film, which is going to be playing at Sundance. This is written by Kevin Smith, When Colleens Collide. And I know that karmically I have done horrible things to myself by picking this pile of comics for this week.
Let me just say,
hopefully there will be some interesting talk at least about licensed comics and anthologies.
If I can say at least, we're going to do Yoga Hosers last.
Okay.
And we're going to review it as we are Canadians. We are going to review it in the speech of the characters of the book. So I want you to prepare ahead of time a little material here while you could be listening to the other guys talk about the books instead of doing that. Why make an exception this week and instead think about how you're going to review Yoga Hosers? But, I think we can all say, I think I feel comfortable saying Keith ahead of time here. I'm going to let Chris go off on this because clearly he needs to. But let's never pick another Transformer book to review ever again.
Deal.
yeah, sold.
Who wants? Chris, just go right into Transformers. You got some things to say.
Actually, I don't think this is a bad book.
What? Darn. That's no good.
Mo, you go.
The problem.
Well, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Within the property itself. I mean, who the hell can tell one robot for another?
I know who Soundwave is. That's the only one I ever know who they
are. But what does Soundwave become a good guy?
Okay, I had the same question. But Soundwave or Shockwave? Was Shockwave the bad guy, maybe?
No, there's Soundwave and Shockwave were both bad guys. My question was, when did Optimus Prime become a bad guy?
Yeah.
I just didn't understand any of it. You might as well have written it in Cantonese, and I could have stared at the pictures and probably gained just as much from the story as I actually did from trying to read it in English.
I will say Rat Trap was actually in the book for one panel. My all-time favorite Transformer. But other than that...
But it did have, Brett, it did have that introduction. It did do a previously. It yes. did. It did.
But you can't. You can't. You can't solve 20 years of Transformer continuity in one little
comic book version. It was almost like, remember they used to do that in the cartoon, like in the '80s or previously. And then they show you a quick clip of what happened and you'd still be like, huh? And then
one of the reasons I grabbed this one and threw it into the mix was, lots of people talk about how there should be a previously on. And we had said last week that there should be, you know, just a page of heads where it tells you everyone's name. This book does both of those things, and it didn't help.
No,
because they're all nondescript Transformers.
So really, like, the two things that everyone talks about, well, why don't they do this? It would save everything. Like, it wasn't actually that helpful because it's just so complicated and everyone looks the same, except for Soundwave, who, you know, all the kids today know what a portable cassette recorder looks like. so they've kept him true to his 1980s form.
I would say that actually the roll call was way more helpful to me than the previously.
Even then, you still, every panel, you were actually going back to the front page because it was just like, all right, so I got a guy with some gray and purple.
And some horns.
I don't know which one it is.
Now, but this is probably a very good book if you were...
What?
If you had any idea what these Transformers were, we can't tell. I think the problem is with the property not translating comics. Who's buying these comic books?
Well, that's actually the biggest with this.
Because I don't think I've ever read a good Transformer comic book. It's not like G.I. Joe.
Oh, that first 4-issue miniseries, that was great.
Well, yeah, I mean, back in the old days was one thing, but, you know, it...
Was that Herb Trimpe did the original?
Yeah.
Let's just talk about that.
I was kind of hoping I could steer us into the G.I. Joe, but...
No, they have a lot of these books. They definitely have their fans. I know somebody who's a huge Transformer fan, collects them. He gets all these books. He talks about the art. They have a couple artists who are spectacular working on Transformers books. They didn't put them on this book. now I don't even blame the art. Like, it's to me, it's like, well, here's like we talk about Mike Johnson, how he would with Star Trek the week before. How he let like the continuity and kind of the history and all that stuff and your general knowledge, he let that do the heavy lifting for him so he could just tell the story. Like he uses it, and they didn't bother doing it. Like they don't do that at all. Like to me, I read this and I'm like here is the problem with this. Say I picked this up and gave this to somebody, to a kid who has never read a comic book before, hoping that this is going to draw him in. Not only is he not going to come back to this book, he will never read another comic book again for the rest of his life.
That's not just this book that we've got this week, amazingly enough. But the funny thing is so Transformers number 38 from last year sold 8,864 copies. You know, and that means that, you know, even this year. So this issue will probably sell about 8,000 to 8,500. And I'm like, that means that there's probably that many people that actually understand the storyline going on right now.
Well, it's so.
Go ahead.
It's one of the things, like, you know, I often quote that Eric Stevenson piece from a couple of years ago where he talked about licensed properties and connecting to the movies not being the route to new readers, because, like, this is really going to appeal to people who are predisposed to liking comics and like Transformers.
Yes.
It's, you can't handle this to any, you know, Transformers fan and expect that they're going to make it very far in, I mean, maybe they'll stay with this book because, you know, they want more Transformers stuff, but they're not, it's not going to expand them into other comics because as a piece of craft, it's not very good.
No, the thing is, if they're selling 8,000, you know, a year ago, and they're selling 8,000 now, they'll sell 8,000 a year from now. Mm-hmm. And if they want to grow that, if they want to grow that to 10,000, they can't, because the way they do this book, the style and they do this book is so non-inclusive to new, no, so unwelcoming. It's probably a better way to put it, to new readers. You can't grow it. And I think it's like I said, I think it's more, you look at all the different characters and you have all the characters look the same and you have all this, you have tons of plot go, like there's a lot of plot here. Where Chris says it's going to probably a good book, I think it's probably a good plot. I don't know, it's not a good book, but I think it's probably a good story in there. But to me, I look at it and I think neither the writer or the artist and obviously the editor, they don't understand the storytelling in comic book art form. Like if this was a cartoon or a movie, it might be great. But comic books are their own art form for storytelling. It has a different pacing and a different everything else. And it's obvious to me, I'm like, they need to go back and study like Walt Simonson's Thor or something like that, where you have all these different characters and all these different plots going on. And yet it flows and it reads nicely to both people reading it and to new readers. So you should go back and study some of the masters and learn it, because I'd like to see the people make this book do well. I want to see them get better.
You don't even have to go back that far. Something like Ed Brisson's run on Sons of Anarchy was great. You could pick up any issue and follow right along without knowing anything about the characters. Yet, if you know anything about the characters, the story is just that much more enhanced.
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, I really wanted to get out to talk more about property than the comic itself, because I think it's like there was a couple of things, particularly the previously on, that I think it's easy to say that those are those are a fix all for getting new readers, but clearly you can do that and still not be able to unpack that much story.
The thing is, I'll argue that almost every book is like Spider-Man's a property too. It's just that the property is owned by the same people who created it, but it's still a property. It still has that same thing where people should be able to pick it up and be familiar enough with the universe that you shouldn't have to do anything with it because they know Spider-Man already, just like Transformers. They both have the same advantage.
I will say I always enjoy, even if I've been reading the comic for quite a while, I always enjoy those little balloons with the faces in them and brief expos just to see how they're summarizing that one particular character this week.
Well, let's jump into some Dark Horse Presents. Now, I wanted to look at this as an example of anthology, because there aren't a lot of anthologies right now. There's really
now we know why.
This and Island, Heavy Metal, of course. Not a whole lot else though.
There's probably a good reason for that.
Legends of Tomorrow, of course, at DC, which was really a bunch of miniseries that they threw into a very pricey like 6-issue run so that they could burn them off.
Now, did they actually print those physically, or were they just digital? Because
Legends of Tomorrow, no, it was printed.
It was print. Okay.
Yeah. Probably
it was very pricey, and I thought, I thought at one time they announced it was just going to be a digital,
digital
exclusive thing, which would have been good. They could have, reduced the price a little bit.
No, their DC's digital stuff is really focused towards the tie-ins to the games and the kind of key characters like Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman.
I just want Metal Men without paying $7.99.
I know. Well, and with the exchange rate, we're looking at $12 for an issue of Metal Men with three bonus stories that you're not going to read. Maybe I would read the Firestorm, I should say. I might read half of the stories in it. But still, it's pretty steep for...
But if they split them off into four single issues for 99 cents each digitally, I think I would have been there for most of them.
Yep.
Didn't Conway do that Firestorm?
Yeah, Conway's doing the Firestorm. Yeah, so Firestorm I would probably enjoy. I'm not going to read any of them until the price drops. preferably $7 an issue.
I'd like the price. I'd like the price to drop if I was going to read more Dark Horse Comics Presents too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the problems with an anthology of this type is just the sticker shock. Because I think that Dark Horse Presents is also $7.99, $6.99 or $7.99. Island is like $10 or something, because it's a weird format. I mean, anytime you're going to do 64 or 80 pages of comic, it's going to run into some cash. So all of these stories, at the exception of one, were coming in late. There's six chapters in here. One's a Tarzan's Five. Kira, Alien Jungle Girls, Chapter 9, The Suit, Chapter 3, Mr. X, Chapter 1, Mr. Monster, Chapter 2, and Finder, Chapter 8. So all of these were leaping in pretty late in the story. Who wants to start on this one?
Brett, go, Brett.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is that there's some great talent that's working on this stuff. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Dean Motter. I do like the Mr. Monster stories anyways. It's the funny thing is, though, is that nothing in here, like, I like Tarzan, I like Mr. Monster, I like Mr. X, but none of them actually make me want to read a serialized comic anyways, like or an anthology, because I just get so tired of reading them in 5-page snippets, you know, and in this case, it was made that much worse because the last story I really, really, really didn't like. So at the end of the book, there's so much text in the book. So by the end, I felt like this book took me forever to read, and I was left with what I thought was the worst storyline of the entire thing. And it was just like, stupid Dark Horse Presents, you know? and I'm like,
you have stolen an hour from me.
So this is the way it went. Stupid Dark Horse Presents. Stupid Keith for giving me stupid Dark Horse Presents. But, you know, so I think that I know that there is quality to be had in here. You just have to be willing to either pony up and be interested in reading the rest of the stories, or pony up and just read one story, the one story you want to read. I don't know. I know why there's not that many around, because this is a hard, hard sell.
I find the same with Heavy Metal. I've picked up a couple issues recently because of a friend of the show, Ryan Ferrier. A couple of his Challenger short stories have been collected in Heavy Metal now. So I picked up a couple there to support that. But I have the same experience of I enjoy those. I probably enjoy one out of the other five stories. And then there's a lot of I don't even know what's going on, and I don't want to know what's going on. And why are you doing this to me?
Yeah. Why are you doing this to us?
Because I wanted to talk about anthologies. I wanted to open discussion.
Yeah, there's a lot of blame getting thrown around right now. It's just like,
an anthology, obviously, I mean, if you're going to, you're never going to have an anthology where everything is number ones, except for that first issue.
Yeah,
and so again, how do you grow it? How do you grow the sales of this if there is no way? I mean, as I look at this, I thought to myself, okay, there are two of these storylines I think I could really enjoy. So what I'd like to be able to do is go back and grab just that one digitally and just download that one storyline and have them all be all these mini stories that are coming out at this pace and be able to collect them how I want to in my own way. Like, it seems like in this digital day and age, this format of this is what you're going to read and you have to buy all these, the rest of this with it is out of date to me.
Well, it's funny. I actually had this real sudden urge to start buying or to start reading Marvel Comics Presents. And I'm like,
don't do it. You know,
that'd be bad.
I had the same thought like recently because I realized it's the 25th anniversary of Weapon X this year. Like 25 years ago right now, they were in the midst of the Weapon X storyline by Winsor Smith.
And a lot of crap around it, man.
A ton of crap around it. So much. Oh.
Did Ghost Rider ever have a good story in Marvel Comics Presents?
There weren't a lot of... because there were so many, I mean, four stories an issue for, you know, 160 issues or something. That's, I mean, probably we remember 20 good ones or 30 good ones out of that, but that's like, you know, out of 600 chapters.
The thing about that Marvel Comics Presents is they would throw a lot of, they would have one character that was popular and they would have one name creator on it. And the rest, I don't know if it was people getting tryouts or people that were just like interns that they were, or whatever, but it definitely wasn't top tier talent. And really very few of them went on to do anything. So, I mean, at least you're given, Dark Horse is trying here. It's just not, it doesn't work in this day and age to me.
You would get old Marvel Comics Presents also, they did a lot of samples, like teasers. So, you know, Byrne did an 8-pager that led into She-Hulk. Of course, sorry, Weapon X by Barry Windsor Smith. I know you're amazing, but you pale next to the 8-pager of Nth Man.
Well, what wasn't the Nth Man stuff in that just leftover books from his series that got canceled?
No, it was it's a prologue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it came before the series. Most of the stories in there came before. So there was a Nomad, She-Hulk, and Nth Man that all came before the series.
I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast though if it wasn't for the anthology. I mean, for me, one of the real gateway comics when I was a kid was, and that this is what got me loving DC, and this is what gave me the sense of DC legacy and the sense of DC history and the wide range of characters and getting to know them all. And that was World's Finest. And you had the Batman Superman story up front, and then you had all the anthology ones. And that's where I first, met Captain Marvel, Shazam, and Hawkman, sorry. Yeah. And and Green Arrow against Vertigo, like that. That's like, this is where all of this stuff and all these characters that I'm so familiar with now, that all came from that. So it can work, but that's all within, the difference is that's all within one universe, so it still all ties in together. Whereas this is all a bunch of individual storylines that have no real connection to each other, which makes it far more difficult.
And very different style in so many of them too. Like they're not even siblings or, I mean, maybe it's good, but I mean, very much like heavy metal where it's just, the art styles are going to be all over the map and storytelling styles.
It's kind of like watching TV with a clicker in your hand.
Yeah. Watching 10 minutes at a time of six different programs.
Yeah. and it's interesting too, because these are not like new talents. These are old talents. These are a lot of people that have been around for a while. So now, issue number 16 of Dark Horse Presents sold 4,318 at a $5.99 price tag. I don't know if the price tag has gone up, but we have to assume that the sales have gone down. I mean, it's probably around 3,500 to 4,000 now. So you're getting less people to half as many people to this as you are to Transformers. So
that's twice as much money.
They relaunch this every 2 or 3 years too. Like it's because it'll just be, a decline, a normal attrition of the book, and then they'll start everything fresh. So probably we're not too far away from, I think the last one ran 20 or 30 issues too. I mean, they've been using this brand for, 30 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And they usually, anything good in the magazine usually gets reprinted on its own as well. So
hey, this is where we got Sin City first time, wasn't
That's
it?
That's true. Yeah. A lot of some of the early Sin Cities were in Dark Horse Presents. A lot of the Hellboys as well. What was the other one? Art Adams had a series that was only ever in, I think he had a special and then only stuff in DHP.
Monkey
Man and O'Brien. There's been a lot of really interesting stuff through this. I was fascinated that Mr. X and Mr. Monster are both in this, which means like this could be two out of the six stories could have been in Dark Horse Presents 30 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And I have to say the Mr. Monster story actually made me glad I kicked into the Kickstarter about a year back. So this served as a nice little preview of a character that I'm going to get a big book of. So
It made me want to read Futility.
Well, and don't forget our friend Jerry Ardway. His Semi-Auto Magic is also from DHP.
Yeah, and I love that one so
supported
much.
Supported that Kickstarter. So I've done what I wanted to do, which is open a discussion about anthologies more than this one in particular. So yay me.
So Deadeye. So what were you hoping to accomplish with Deadeye?
I thought we should throw in something smaller press, and I thought we should talk about something that was a different style and format that we're usually used to talking about. So Deadeye, Begun in Blood, it came out just in March, was the release date. Mature audience, Western, from Creative Mind Energy Comics. And this is written by Adrian Vassel, it's with a W, so it could be either one, and illustrated by Nathan Gooden. Who wants to jump in on this one?
I'll go. This is my favorite book, easily, that we read this week. It's 128 pages. I would like to read all three of them. I think that as far as this is what I'm talking about, the instincts for storytelling, the natural instincts. I'm not sure if these guys have worked any before in comic books. It doesn't seem to me from reading the book, the way that they were talking, like they have any history, like they're working as regular comic book people or they've done anything previously. And if they have, I haven't heard it. But their instincts in storytelling for me are very good. The pacing, and it's easy to have, you know, good pacing when you have 128 pages to tell a story. But I like it. They let the characters be discovered through the dialogue and the actions. And the art is reminiscent of like a Beasley, something like that, you know? I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, you know? I mean, I'm a sucker for those Joar Lansdale type, you know, of dark kind of horror / supernatural westerns. And this has some of that theme to it. There's an alien type creature going on here too. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it quite a bit.
The funny thing is that I didn't realize that it was three or even more coming up. So at the end of it, I was just thinking, like, it's 128 pages. So, like, at the end, I reached, and I'm like, where's the rest of the damn thing? Because, yeah, I absolutely agree. This was, by a long shot, my favorite work of the week. And I thought the art was really beautiful. Like some of those pages, the full page, there's a lot of full page spreads in this, but some of those are just amazing. Really great work.
Yeah, I have to say, actually, I found the watercolors beautiful, but I actually found the story really slow. And with a book like this, I think you might just have to be in the mood for it. I did appreciate the story, but I spent a lot of the time in this book just sort of going, oh, get on with the character development. But lately I've been really into, ever since our Brett Booth episode, into talkie comics and movies. I've been rewatching The West Wing and Babylon 5, and I'm a fan of exposition right now.
Wait a second, what's with the character development. The whole book is character development because not much actually happens. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand what you're saying at all. Like I said, characters are developed through natural dialogue, but I mean, between 128 pages and actions, there's a lot of it. You know, I mean, one guy's a minimalist because he's just kind of he's that typical man with no name. You know, doesn't say, 10 words when one will do character, but that's okay.
No, I was just sort of thinking, okay, I get it. You're the outlaw Josie Wales, the man with no name type character. Let's get on to some action. I would have liked, you know, some more balloons here and there. And it really wasn't, it was just a lot of beautiful art, but I think they could have done this a whole lot quicker for what we got. And
I like that they took their time, Chris. I really, so many, they did a lot. They did a lot in 22 pages in Transformers. I wish they'd taken their fucking time.
And not having a real conclusion by the end of the first volume. I mean, it does just sort of drift off. I mean, I know it's a to-be-continued, but I still think by the end of 132 pages,
yeah, but I would have liked... How long did it take you to read? I think it was 128, but regardless, how long did it take you to read? I've read 22-page books that took me longer than this, and yet I still enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, definitely. It didn't take long at all. I don't know. There was a lot of real estate there for the amount of story. That's all I'm saying.
There are certainly
On the book.
There are certainly a lot of really almost every page is no more than three panels. There are quite a few pages with no words or only a few words. So I had warned you guys when I told you that I thought we should review this one, that it's going to look much like it'll take much longer to read than it really will, because because of two or three panels a page. It clips along. I love the art on this book. It's like the watercolor, the look to it. This artist does have a couple of books on Comixology, a series called Killbox, but it's black and white, so it doesn't have quite the same look as this. I would grab that one. I would have already bought that on Comixology if it had the same watercolor look to it. I love the quiet moments in this book. We'll have to grab a couple of images from it for our show notes, because there's a lot of really great just stop and pause and reflect kind of moments.
I love comic books. Yeah, I love it when a comic book will have a guy on the panel and somebody will say something to him and he'll have an expression and then he'll change that expression in the next panel. And you can realize he's thinking. You know what he's thinking because the art is well enough to draw the facial expression and to tell you what that is. So a guy could be angry, and then he can have a moment of, oh my God, you're right. And then those little moments of wanting to tell me that story in the visual medium, understanding the pacing and the unique pace and the unique art form of comic books that the Transformers and many other books are missing. This had that. I love those little quiet moments in comics. You know, it's a visual medium. Take advantage of that.
I don't know. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen Once Upon a Time in the West, one of my favorite Westerns of all time. Yet I have popped it into my DVD player a couple times and started to watch it. And after about 5 minutes of watching the damn windmill go around, I have to take it out. I think it might be just a mood thing.
Maybe.
I mean, I get that from a Western perspective. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Westerns, so it definitely takes me a lot to get in the mood. I think that for maybe the first 20 pages, I was cognizant of this being a Western. I think the rest of them, I actually forgot more or less that it was a Western and just went along with the story. And that's where I appreciate the book, is because it made me not care that I don't like Westerns that much. And it was just like, yeah, this is just a good story. It doesn't matter that it's a Western.
And it opens up with a lot of action, by the way. I will say that. But let me put it this way. Let's go back to movies. We're talking about movies since Chris brought that up here. You've all seen American Beauty, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. The scene in American Beauty, the scene in American Beauty where they film the piece of paper floating in the wind and it goes on for a long, long time. Do you like that moment or not?
Plastic bag and yes.
Plastic bag. Good point. Sorry. I love it. And nothing happens, but it's the beauty of, I don't know, nature, reality, the world in a way that you see it. And right there, that's it. That's a quiet moment. Comic books can have that too. Like, if you can enjoy that, you could be saying nothing's going on. And some people hate that scene. I know they do.
Oh, yeah.
But I love it because it captures something so unique and beautiful that is never captured on film.
And what I really like about that scene is, and it's something that this book does well, is it doesn't spoon feed you what it means. Like, it shows you that, it shows you how the characters react to it, but it doesn't stop and then explain what you're supposed to think about it. Like in American Beauty, that scene happens and the characters react as they react. And I mean, lots of people don't like that scene because, like, what's the bag supposed to mean? Like, I don't know, what's it mean to you? Like, it's, that's the whole point of the scene, is that it's impactful to them. It represents something to them. You know, stopping and explaining that. It's interesting. Chris, you said, like, I think it was someone said visual medium. It's something that bugged me about one of the DC Rebirth books that came out, that everyone else was touting as, you know, this book is so amazingly done. I'm like, but the entire, it was the Wonder Woman, and it's almost entirely narration boxes. Like, almost the entire issue.
Wow, I hadn't bought that one yet, but now I'm buying it right after the.
Go get it. We can talk about that next week, Chris.
Yeah, no, I bought it. I haven't read it yet. I haven't read it yet. I was actually gonna. I know Brett would kill me, but I was gonna bring up Rebirth at the end of this when we're done with the reviews, because it's too big to not talk a little bit about.
I'm okay with that. We got a few minutes here. We got to move on. Any last thoughts on this book, other than track it down? It's not on Comixology, unfortunately. So. You'll have to do some searching to find this one.
Comixology needs to fix that.
Yeah, someone needs to fix it, that's for sure, because this book's really great. Dead Eye is the name of it. All right, well, we've got a last book here. And as Canadians, I had some doots about this book. I'm not the hugest Kevin Smith fan, And
really trying your teeth, aren't you? You're really.
Apparently, it's very hard for you to talk Canadian, eh?
I don't know where they learned the Canadian accent from, but
perhaps the same place that they thought that a Canadian actually referred to. A sophomore as a sophomore, period.
throwing in American phrases that these girls are off to college soon too.
I know, like I actually watched a clip of the movie as well that was online, and it's just like, oh, we get to go to a senior party. Oh yeah, you're the sexy sophomores, and I'm like, fuck you! This is
I think that's intentional humor.
I really don't think it is.
What? Kevin Smith has spent time in Canada.
What? That's the kind of thing that you don't get.
Directing an episode of Degrassi does not count as spending time in Canada.
No, he shot Tusk here. He's in Canada right now. He's shooting his new movie right now. He did spend time at the Vancouver Film School. I think he knows that he's being silly with it. It's just like when we try to convince Americans we all live in igloos. It's a joke.
Just good, clean fun, that is. Also, we don't want them to invade us.
I mean, this book has us referring to... has characters referring to their genitals as moose parts.
No, see, and that, I believe... is his attempt at humor. I absolutely believe that. The sophomore thing is I truly believe his just general stupidity overall. I have watched a trailer, I've watched a movie clip, and I have read this fucking book, and there is no chance whatsoever that I will ever, ever watch this movie. Like, I watched a review of the movie.
Let's pull it back here, Brett.
Well, Brett's just expressing what in the comic they call ingrained Canadian optimism.
That's right. I am,
you know what, Brett,
truly optimistic of this.
Well, H-E double hockey sticks, Brett.
My mom does say that, so that's fair.
Well, that's totally fair. I don't think that's a Canadian thing, though, is it?
I don't know
hockey, and it's Canadian, man.
I have no idea what a preparatory school is. No idea. No clue.
Now, isn't the oot thing, like, maybe I just don't notice it to my ears, but isn't that more of a... a Eastern thing rather than a Western
there's
thing?
There's a lot of the stuff that's he's saying here and you doing here would not be so much in Manitoba. It would be more all the way to the East Coast. Prince Edward Island, maybe.
Although Keith doesn't talk like that. Come on, Keith, you should know this better than anyone.
The Maritimes has a very specific accent, and it's not the word "aboot." It's
does have it though. A lot of Ontario, Timmins, Ontario, places like that, Northern Ontario.
Yeah, more of Ontario thing.
Yeah. Have that really a lot.
The Maritimes has a weird AR sound that almost sounds like a pirate. You drive a car.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Bar. Yes, I gotcha. I know that accent now.
That's a very it's very subtle, but after you pick it up pretty quickly. Yeah, go down to the bar.
Oh, there were so many Canadian jokes in this comic book, and then they bring out the French fries, and there isn't a poutine joke.
Well, that's because they did that in Tusk. Like, these characters first showed up in the movie Tusk, which is, I love that movie. And I know, Keith, you couldn't make it through.
I could.
And it's an awful movie that I love, though. Because Kevin Smith has spent so much time going, man, I'm going to try and make money. Man, I'm going to do this to make money. This is to make money. Now I'm going to make this sequel to make money and blah, 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 make money. And then he eventually went, I want to be taken as a serious filmmaker. I'm going to make a horror film or type deal. And he makes a horrible movie in Red State. And then he finally thinks of this idea at Tusk and goes, fuck it. I don't care anymore. I'm going to make this movie. It's going to be awful. Nobody's going to want to see it. I don't care. I'm going to do what I wanted. I'm going to do things that you don't do. There's a scene in this in Tusk where I can't remember the name of the character, like Johnny Depp's character and the Gila Point. And he meets the villain. Who's the actor who plays the villain in that movie? Do you remember? He was in Red State as well. What's his name?
Michael something.
Michael Parks.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So he meets this character but it's just like two of them. Like he meets this serial killer, but he doesn't know it's him. The serial killer is playing like a real dummy, and Johnny Depp is just playing the most French human being of all time, the most French Canadian human being of all time. And they say everything they need to say in about the first 30 seconds of the scene. And then the scene keeps on repeating them saying those same things over and over again for no reason for like another 4.5 minutes. It's against every rule of how you make a film. And he just doesn't care. And I'm like, I love it because it's just hilarious. You either get it or you don't.
He's just so painfully bad at making movies that
we can all agree Moose Jaws is the greatest idea for a movie.
Oh, that's Jaws, the moose. Come on. I cannot wait for this film.
All right, we need to. We only have a couple of minutes left to talk about other things. Are we ready to not talk about this?
All I'm going to say is this is not a particularly good book because he doesn't. His humor is usually off, but I'm not offended by the Canadian. I do think he said the Canadian stuff that he does in it. I think he does do with love. Awesome. I think he does go a little ridiculous, but he does do it with love. But it's no Tusk.
Also, now, guaranteed, there's one of at least one of our listeners is going. I listen to your show every goddamn week, and of course you sound like that. That's exactly what you sound like. You're one of our Australian listeners who's like, that is your accent. What are you talking about?
I am a little disappointed that they're charging for this book. When Kevin Smith commissioned it, it was supposed to be out for Free Comic Book Day.
Oh.
Just to hype the movie, but Dynamite got involved and decided to buy it and put it out there. For a book they want money for, it is lacking in a little bit of ways. So
yeah, it would have been a good if it was a Free Comic Day book, I would have grabbed this for sure.
Brett still would have hated it.
I liked it, but it would have been the right price.
Yeah. Yes. Free, absolutely.
No, and it definitely was just out to promote the movie. So.
I only want Kevin Smith to pay me back for my time. That's it.
Oh, hey, look, he's not. I don't care. Kevin Smith's not making money off this. I don't. It's Yoga Hosers, the comic book, guys. Like,
he's not going to make money off of the damn movie. So
no, he just doesn't care anymore. I love that.
Well, he's, I mean, from what I understand, it's like this was a perfectly good excuse to make a movie and get his and get Johnny Depp's daughter and his daughter in a movie together so that they could keep hanging out. There you go.
They've been hanging out since they were 3 years old. They could get to do a movie together. Why not? All right.
Doesn't mean I have to watch it.
Chris, yes. I don't know how much DC you were reading before. I don't know how much of the Rebirth you've read now, but it is, like I say, too big to completely ignore. So we won't go too long because we cut these shows off now. Brett has his air horn ready to go. But how is the Rebirth working for you?
It's working 100%. They're fixing everything from the New 52 I really hated, like Superman. It's rocking so far. They brought back Wally West. I like that. I'm still unsure, but I'm really intrigued about the whole button thing. So I think it could be stronger, actually. Plus, I mean, Jan Jurgens, he's there. He's up front. He where he should be. So I'd give it an 8 out of 10 on.
You don't have an issue with any of the books?
None of them that I've read. I haven't read a whole lot. I'm excited. Read? I've read Rebirth number one and Detective. I got a thing I checked out. So that's about it.
You read Detective without reading the Batman Rebirth first?
You don't need it. I read both, and there's nothing in Rebirth that ties to Detective.
There's nothing in Rebirth.
There's nothing in the Batman Rebirth that ties to Detective.
I actually assumed as much without even thinking about it. It wasn't
dope. No, it doesn't have anything
connected.
Until the Superman shirt does. The Superman Rebirth really ties to the action. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, Batman doesn't. Batman's really is leading into just the Batman title. There's nothing in it that... Detective actually was a much... like cleaner starting point than I expected from it, because I expected it to, like, those Superman and Batman Rebirths, I expected to set up the whole line, and really Superman does, but Batman didn't at all. Did you try any of them, Brett?
I read Rebirth number one.
Okay.
What'd you think?
It was good.
It is good. It's so far actually my favorite comic book of the year.
Now, All-Star Batman is listed in Comixology under the Rebirth stuff. Is it actually a Rebirth book?
I think it'll probably still be branded as that. It doesn't come out for a couple of months though.
That's
the new Scott Snyder book. So whether they'll still be branding stuff as Rebirth, they probably will, because I think, you know, Super Sons, which isn't out until October or November, will be a Rebirth book. So.
Yeah, probably isn't the Teen Titans, isn't there a Titans book or something like that coming out in September or October that's a Rebirth?
Titans by Abnett and Brett Booth is out this week, and then Teen Titans isn't out for a little while.
Yeah.
Because, there's the young team that's going to be led by Damian Wayne, that's out in the fall.
So you've tried all the books then, Keith?
All of them. The only one I didn't read was... I didn't read Aquaman. I think that's the only one I skipped so far.
Are they all working for you other than that Wonder Woman then?
I didn't not like the Wonder Woman. I'll still give it a shot. I just thought it was a bit clunky because it was really exposition heavy. I would have rather they give her someone to talk to for that issue and do the same story.
Trying to roll back some of the stuff that they introduced, like the Amazons, you know, they were having male children and selling them off and stuff like that. So they really have to roll back the whole Amazon, a lot of the Amazon mythology that they had put in the book previously.
Well, that Rebirth is a bit vague as to whether, I mean, there's a bunch of the books right now that, because of what's coming out of Rebirth number one, the idea, I think at this point, everyone knows, I don't think we have to play games with, Dr. Manhattan is in Rebirth number one, or hinted at in Rebirth number one, that he messed around with history, that he's messed around with the DC universe. And so there's a couple of books, Wonder Woman, Flash, and the Titans book by Abnett and Booth that will be really kind of carrying that piece of that something deeper is wrong with the universe than just they lost some time, that it is that someone may still be actively messing with them. And that's kind of what Wonder Woman, I think they leave that open in the Rebirth as to whether they're going to undo a whole bunch or whether they're just going to, you know, whether they'll go back to what Azzarello was doing. It's a little vague.
Doesn't Dr. Manhattan die at the end of Watchmen?
No.
No, doesn't he?
No, he leaves it.
Oh, that's right.
He leaves the Earth says, I'm going to go somewhere else and maybe I'll make some of my own. I'm fascinated by life. He says I've gotten a new appreciation for life. Maybe I'll go make some.
Yes.
Okay. Is how it ends. It's been too long since
I've read it.
Presumably how they're playing this is that Manhattan leaves the Earth of his world and goes to the DC universe to screw around with it. Yeah. So all of this takes place after Watchmen number 12.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense. Now I remember.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Rebirth was the top selling book of May. Huge shock there, but massive numbers. According to Comics Chronicles, it shipped 235,000 copies in May. It was also a top 10 digital seller for 3 weeks. It was the number one book for 2 weeks running, which is almost unheard of on digital.
Yeah, no, I know the sales will be strong, which is good.
Are excited.
We're at 57 minutes.
It's that time. It is that time.
All right. All I'll say then is I love the Rebirth, and I'm really looking forward to reading the series. But so far, the books themselves, I've been a little disappointed. In fact, a couple of them might be very disappointed. So,
well, there is no series.
Now I want to know which ones you're disappointed in.
Well, I was extremely disappointed in that Batman Rebirth.
Yeah.
Green Arrow, I thought was awful.
Oh, that's too bad. That was awful. I really liked that one.
Yeah. Superman Rebirth and Action Comics. They're well-made books, but they didn't quite connect to me enough to continue reading them, especially I think Action Comics, I don't know. I think they tried to shoehorn too much in there.
Well, all right. We'll close on Mo being wrong then.
So... I'm not wrong. I mean, they shoehorn a lot. It's like those movies, you know, those movies, the comic book adaptations where they put in too much.
Yeah.
I think they put in too much there, so that hurt it for me a little bit.
Well, guys,
it's a very well made book, though.
You guys can all get together and talk Rebirth on another show without me. Then
you're just gonna fade us off like a Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Yeah,
if we don't wrap up soon,
I still gotta read. I gotta the series. I read Green Lantern and Green Lantern Core Oblivion or Edge of Oblivion and Flash and Rob. Nailed it on his last Flash storyline before Rebirth. So, I mean, those are the three books I got to pick up and read here, kind of, because they're the ones I was reading before, but I was just trying out a couple of these other ones. But yeah, yeah. Right,
close her out.
Other than that, we are We Talk Comics, and I still have great hope. I hold out great hope for all Kevin Smith movies in the future. No, I mean, for DC. And we're what? We Talk Comics on the internet? Or We Talk Podcast is the website that we're hosted at.
Yes, that's correct.
We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on TuneIn Radio app, we're on Google Music. At least Brett says we are.
So does Google.
Facebook.
So that seems
we got a Facebook. We Talk Podcast has Twitter. All of us got Twitter accounts. You're already listening to us. Why the hell are we even telling you this?
In case you're just walking by when you listen to an hour of Ross Talk,
so that you can tell your friends, then you can play them this part of the show.
Well, what if you go to iTunes and then you tell a friend and they're like, "I hate Apple, I won't go to iTunes." And they're like, "Well, if only if I knew another way that you could listen to the show that didn't involve going to iTunes.
See, that's absolutely right. I hate iTunes. So
there you go. See, we need to be telling people that there are non-Apple ways to get a hold of the show.
Yeah, completely.
Also non-Google. I mean, let's be fair with which giant corporation you want to
Are we on Zoom?
I think we're on Netflix. I think we're on Netflix now. Hulu. Amazon.
Julian, listen to six episodes a month.
And always, as always, check out our buddies over at Comicosity, who you can find us at, and always help support the show. Any other last words?
I'm good.
Good as well.
I like that you're enjoying Rebirth, Mo.
Well, I'm. You know what, Keith? All I can say to you is I think they know what's wrong, but unfortunately, Geoff Johns can't write every single book for DC.
Hey, I liked Rebirth way more than Yoga Hosers.
We definitely need to get back.
I like Yoga Hosers way more than Transformers.
I like Transformers way more than Yoga Hosers. Oh, wow.